This is Early BP. I'm Mike Farron. The D-backs trailed 2-1 in the bottom of the ninth with two outs last night when David Peralta came through.
He goes into his windup in the 2-1 pitch. Fly ball to right. We're tied. Long home run, David Peralta. Wow.
Ball was crushed. Peralta knew it right away.
So did
Slung
I.
the bat all the way over to the dugout after that. But, boy, that ball was just annihilated.
Peralta's 432-foot blast tied the game. The D-backs got the lead on a Ketel Marte bloop single with runners at the quarters and nobody out in the 10th as they came back to beat the Atlanta Braves in Game 1 of this 4-game series and 10-game homestand 3-2. After the game, we had a chance to catch up with David Peralta.
Let's start with the at-bat against Luke Jackson. Lots of breaking balls to the guys ahead of you. How much were you paying attention to that?
Hey, we got a good scouting report for our hitting coach. And we know the guys throw a lot of slider. So he made a mistake, and that's what you have to be ready for. You know, when you make a mistake, you have to make them pay. So good thing happened for us today. It's a good win for us, and we're just going to do it tomorrow.
So I know you've hit some long home runs. That has to rank up there, though. What did that feel like off the bat?
I don't know. It feels really good. You have to enjoy it. You have to enjoy it. I stand out a little bit, but you have to enjoy those moments because it's something good that you do for the team.
This team seems very resilient. Where does that come from?
Hey, energy. You know, energy, the passion that we have, like the family brotherhood we have in the clubhouse. So we just stick together. We take care of each other, and this is all about.
What can you say about the performance from Luke Weaver tonight, too?
Oh, he's been on fire. He's been on fire, and he'll deserve that.
David, we appreciate the time. Thanks.
Today, it's game two of the 4-game set with the Atlanta Braves. Zach Greinke will make the start for the D-backs against Julio Teheran for the Atlanta Braves. Teheran, known for his changeup, D-backs have seen a lot of off-speed lately. That's part of the reason why they've only hit .225 as a team over their last 11 games. Good news is they're 6-5. In those contests. Coming up on Extra BP today, we'll hear from one of the D-backs' top prospects, Jackson Goddard. Last year's third rounder out of the University of Kansas catches up with the voice of the King County Cougars, Joe Brand. We also will hear from Torrey Lovello, the D-backs' manager, about tonight's game. But next, we'll visit with Tony Perez-Chica, the D-backs' third base coach and infield instructor. We'll talk a little bit about some of the technology and data that they're using to help improve infield play. First of all, I'm curious how you feel like the infield has played overall this season.
I think overall we've done okay. I know we had some hiccups on the road, but those are things that definitely can be worked on and get better on. I think a lot of it had to do, you know, we are adjusting definitely to our turf, which I think it plays well. Went to Colorado, different, you know, real dirt, real grass. So you gotta make sure when you get your workout in. That's game-like. You know, that's what I was telling some of our guys. You know, hey, you know, when you're taking ground balls, make it game-like. You know, I'd rather you take 15 ground balls, game situation-like, than take 30, and then you're kind of like nonchalant on a few. So I think that prepares you. I think some of the best infielders in the league, that's what they do. I watch Arenado take ground balls. It's game-like. It's like every ground ball, it's a game. And I think that's the way you got to take it. You don't have to take 50 of them. You can take 10, 15, but do it the right way.
I want to talk more about that in a second, but you mentioned something with the turf. The last three series basically playing on three different surfaces, right? The turf here, the grass in Colorado, and then the turf in Tampa Bay. How different is it, and how many more grounders or balls off the bat do you have to take when you're adjusting to a new surface versus what you would do here?
It's basically getting used to the hop. You know, you go from real grass to dirt. Definitely, you know, it's a different hop than what we play here. Then you went to Tampa, definitely different. I mean, it just felt like it was more spongier, had a little bit more bounce, the ground balls did. But, hey, we're professionals. We got to make sure that we take ground balls and do the job wherever we go.
You mentioned taking more or fewer reps at game-like speed, and we're seeing that be incorporated in all sorts of different levels of baseball preparation. It's kind of the elite training methods, right? We've seen that with Olympic athletes, that's the way they've trained. How much is that a difference from maybe when you first got into coaching, that there's more emphasis on trying to replicate the speed of the game so that the game slows down easier?
Yeah, I think in our sport, that's a big difference because you can't really, in practice, you can't replicate game speed. So whatever we do, some of the guys that I've been talking to, whatever we do, make sure it's game-like. And some of the guys that have done it like that, I mean, you see why they're successful. And I think overall, especially with us, I really appreciate the guys that start doing it that way because you always want to make sure you're ready for the speed of the game instead of trying to catch up to the speed of the game. And I think guys are starting to recognize that more, especially now with our new turf, that we do go to, you know, grass fields and real dirt, that it is a little bit different. You know, the hops here are different from natural surface. But you know what? That's part of the game. We're going to play 81 games here, and we're going to play 81 games in different ballparks. We have to adjust to whatever comes our way.
So what are some ways that you get them to practice at game speed? How? What are some of the techniques you can use to do that?
Oh, we do a lot of what we call flip fungo. Someone's tossing me a ball. I'm hitting the ball, and it, you know, it basically acts like what you're going to get in a game, the top speed, you know, the top speed ground ball that comes at you quick. I mean, obviously we can't hit it 100 miles an hour like the real guys do it, but we come close, as close as we can. And really it's the eyes getting used to that hop, that game speed, because it's all about the eyes. The eyes and your feet are going to react if you're practicing the right way. And I think if you do it that way, in the long run, nobody's going to be perfect. We're all going to make errors because we're going to be out there. But the good guys that do it the right way, the same routine, are the ones that make less.
The technological aspect is changing a lot in coaching. For you, what's maybe evolving or changing?
I think the best thing we've had is just the information we get. I mean, the charts we get from our guy, you know, our guys, our analytics guys, is unbelievable. In the past, we had to learn how to read swings, and we had to learn how to, hey, position ourselves, where now it's there. The information is going to be there for our guys, and now it's for us. Being put in a position to make all the plays. I mean, a shortstop nowadays is not really even a true shortstop. He's a guy that can play second. He's a guy that might have to play in a shift, play third. Our third baseman is not only a third baseman. He's going to have to learn to play a little short. He's going to have to learn to play in the second base side. So it's tougher now in that regards, because they do play different spots and different balls coming off a bat. But it's something that they're going to have to get used to. This is the new modern age of baseball. The information is there. And for us, we just have to learn to catch the ball and throw the ball to the right spot.
Was there a moment when the shift was sold to you, like where you went, oh, yeah, this totally makes sense? Was there something that you remember going, okay, yeah, I'm totally in?
Well, it was 3 years ago for me. Once I got here and you started seeing the information that we got compared to what we usually, you know, we would get in the minor leagues, it's totally different. And it's just there's more information that you can use for the players. And I think you see, and I'm not going to say that the shift doesn't get burned, because it does. But I think last year, I mean, it was almost 80-something percent. This is a guess now, 85% that we were placed in the right spot. And a lot of it had to do with the information we were getting.
That's really incredible. 85% of the time, you get to the right spot. Now, for practicing, do you feel like it's important to practice at game speed in those positions where you'll be in game too?
Oh, yeah. You know, we did that a lot in spring. We put these guys everywhere they can be, deep 3-4 hole, the second base side, the other side, in the 5-6 hole. You know, you put them in all the spots that they're going to get in, during the game, during the in-season game. And it's really up to them to get the game speed. You know, we let them know, say, hey, you know, this is game speed. We do the soft toss fungo, which they all like. They love doing that. And a lot of hand drills that we usually do before we start our soft toss fungo. But the more they do that, I think they get to, what their eyes get used to, the velocity coming off the bat, the hops coming off the bat. It just relaxes them a little bit more, and they're in a better position to make the plays.
That's D-backs third base coach and infield instructor Tony Perez Chica. Interesting, we were going through some of the numbers last night, but since they started really tracking every pitch and ball in play the last 12 seasons in Major League Baseball, 83 to 87.5% of all ground balls have either gone to the pull side for a hitter or right up the middle of the field. And that's why you see so many teams positioning guys three to the right side or three to the left side, depending on the handedness of the batter. It's very difficult, actually, to hit ground balls the other way to try and beat the shift. Now, conversely, the numbers are much more balanced when you see fly balls to the outfield. They are much more balanced in that regard than they are on the ground. I always found that really, really interesting. All right, in a little bit, we'll talk to Torrey Lovello about tonight's game and recap a little bit of yesterday as well. But up next, Joe Brand, the voice of the King County Cougars, catches up with the D-backs. Minor League Pitcher of the Month, Jackson Goddard.
Obviously off to a great start, but the main thing is you've been healthy, dealing with an oblique injury your last year of college. So what's been the best part about that?
It's been good, yeah. I've been feeling good. I'm feeling healthy. I'm actually doing a lot of the, I mean, in the past year or so, I've had some shoulder tendonitis, some oblique issues. So I learned a lot of different mobility and rehab exercises to do to get those better. better. And I've now that I'm healthy, I'm still doing those exercises because, I mean, I'm just kind of trying to keep strengthening those muscles and keep strengthening my body. And I've been feeling good so far, so it's been good.
Recently, the Diamondbacks named you the Minor League Pitcher of the Month for April. What was the first thing that went through your mind when you got that accolade?
Yeah, it's cool. It's a cool honor to have. It's exciting. I'm happy with the way I've pitched so far. I mean, obviously, it's up in the Midwest. I've had some cold, rainy outings, but honestly, I've been able to embrace it because I know as much as it's tough for me to be out there, it's even tougher for the hitters to be out there holding the wood bat. All these guys are coming from Florida and Arizona where it's warm, so I've been able to feel like I've been able to take advantage of that and use that cold weather to my advantage so far.
Yeah, and you've had some experience pitching in weather like this, pitching at Kansas, so have you kind of been somewhat of a leader in that aspect? Have you told these guys some tips or tricks at all?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of guys that pitched in the cold, especially a lot of the starters. I mean, I know Ryan Weiss pitched in worse weather than I did. Justin Lewis, I'm sure they had some cold ones up in Kentucky, so a lot of us are used to it, and so it's not too big of a deal. But yeah, it's definitely been a drastic change from Arizona.
Your pitching coach, Mike Parrott, mentioned how your slider and your changeup is just complementing your fastball so much right now because of how those other two pitches are excelling. What's been able to make that happen?
Just getting more consistent week by week with my delivery. There's still a lot of work to do on both those pitches. There's times where I'll go out there and it's not the same pitch as it was the outing before, and I've been able to do a decent job of kind of dealing with what I have each day. But moving forward, I think I'll be able to be better if I can just be more consistent with those three pitches from outing to outing.
And obviously the success has helped this, but you're a very quick worker. I mean, you get the ball, you throw it right away. Have you always been like that?
Yeah, I've always been like that. I mean, I just feel like I know I've played infield before, and I've played behind guys that work really slow, so I kind of know how that can, it's easy as an infielder or outfielder to lose focus when a guy's moving slow, so I know that my defense behind me appreciates me working fast, and I got to keep it under control. So sometimes I get too fast, and that leads to me losing a little control. But yeah, I've always liked to work fast.
So then how out of sync do you get when you get a runner on, or how do you beat that kind of mental adversity?
I mean, I don't know. I really don't think about it too much. I'm not really ever thinking about tempo when I'm out there. It just kind of happens, but I usually don't get too flustered if a guy's taking a long time on the base or I got to slow down out of the stretch. I try to block that out and just work with kind of the pace the game's going.
Minor league pitching coordinator Dan Carlson's in town right now, and along with farm director Mike Bell. Do you get a little excited when these guys come to town? You get to pick their brain, or, I mean, is it a little intimidating?
Yeah, I mean, it's always cool having these guys in town and having a new voice to listen to in bullpens and in all of our work. Every time we get someone new with a new opinion and a new kind of way of looking at things, it's always good, and it's always good to try to get as much as you can out of them while they're here.
Who was the first person you told when you got named Pitcher of the Month for the minor league system?
I was just driving home and I saw it was like D-backs tagged you in a post on Twitter, and I was like, what the hell could this be? And then I looked and saw it, and then I just got some texts about it and stuff. But yeah, it was cool.
Jackson Goddard, the minor league pitcher of the month for April for the King County Cougars. Third rounder last year out of the University of Kansas. Goddard, 7 starts this year, 31 innings, just 23 hits allowed, and a strikeout in inning pitched, and has yet to allow a home run. Last year, he spent a little bit of time in Hillsboro and made 14 appearances there, 13 of them starts as the D-backs got his feet wet in pro ball. But control may be one of the issues with Goddard, but certainly has very good stuff, and he was one of a slew of college pitchers that the D-backs took from the third round on last year that had premium stuff, and almost all of them had very, very good changeups. All right, enough about the minor leagues on this Farm Friday. Let's talk about the major league team. The D-backs get the victory last night over the Atlanta Braves. We talk with Torey Lovello.
Pretty nice comeback last night. Let's start in the ninth inning. The at-bats leading up to David Peralta's game-tying homer. I think you guys saw, 8 or 9 pitches were breaking balls. You think David was ready?
Well, that was the game plan, and we knew going in that he had a sharp breaking ball. The thing that kind of confuses you through the whole process is he also throws a 97, 98 mile an hour fastball that's very effective. But I think David had a clear plan, a clear vision, a great scouting report, trusted it, and David's that type of hitter. And I said it last night, special players do special things at special times, and it was a huge boost for us.
Building the inning then in the bottom of the 10th, what did you see with Ahmed, Kelly, and then obviously Marte with the blooper?
Well, everybody wants to have that big walk-off moment, maybe a gapper or a home run. And those are big moments that develop and pop up without really trying. So I think what we did yesterday is we thought small and big things happened. And it was the leadoff walk by Nick. It was the base hit by Carson. And then just staying on a baseball and getting a lucky break with Marte. It was a built inning, and we executed. And that's what pleased me the most.
John Duplantier came up, pitched. You said he was here to pitch, right? He pitched last night. He's gotten himself in and out of trouble a couple of times now. What do you see when he gets men on base?
Well, the exact same thing I see when he's thrown a bullpen or thrown in a game where there's nobody on base. It's all very, very much the same tempo, the same poise, the same mound presence, the same belief that he's going to execute pitches. He threw a 3-2 breaking ball to Ozzie Albies to finish the top of the 10th inning. That was a pitch that was so well executed and well located that I'm sure he practiced on hundreds of mounds in different locations and different venues to make a good result happen. So it's the hard work. It's the belief that he's going to go out there and do his job, and we're ready to put him in any situation.
You know, the stuff is clearly very good. We haven't even seen peak velocity really from him yet, but he's fallen behind in counts. He's battled his way to get back in. What do you see of the elements that he has that you hope allows him to be able to command pitches a little bit more consistently?
Well, I think, you know, just getting his feet on the ground and making sure that he's comfortable, we'll start to see things spike up a little bit. And he is comfortable. I just think he wants to command the baseball. And when you do, you take a little bit off. But we'll see his stuff jump up from time to time when it comes to velocity. The thing that really pleases me the most is that there's a limitation of walks. He's not really he's limiting walks. He's not really throwing balls all over the place. He gets himself back into counts by locating the fastball on the edges. He can throw breaking balls when he's behind, and I think that's what good big leaguers can do.
Tonight in the lineup, well, no Eduardo Escobar, just a day for him. I think you talked about that a little yesterday.
Yeah, I wanted to give Eduardo a day off. I've been hunting for one, but he's such a hard player to give one to because he wants to play. And every time I tell him that he's down, he pushes back and he makes me think twice about doing it. But in this case, I had to be the parent in the room and I had to say, it's time for you to rest. It's part of our protocol here. We believe in that. And we know that at some point he could impact this game. But it's more about tomorrow for Eduardo.
What are you seeing with him defensively right now? There have been a couple of miscues over the last week.
Yeah, you know, the one in Colorado, I can empathize with him because it was a very hard play. It was a left-handed batter. You don't really see that very often. That chopped him a ball, and it was an in-between hop. And he tried to square up to it and just make a good hands play. The one yesterday at shortstop was a ball that was very well hit. He tried to body up to it and put your glove in the right place, and it's kind of a crapshoot. He's a very, very good defender. I'm not going to say that those plays should or shouldn't have been made. They're very difficult, but we think he can make them. So I want him to continue to work on the things, use his feet in combination with his hands, and I think that's what all good fielders do.
What's the key against Julio Teheran tonight?
Well, you know, he's had some really good years. We know that there have been some trends in a negative direction over the past couple of years, perhaps, but he's throwing the ball very well right now, and that's really what we're going to focus on. We know his reputation is very good for going out and executing a game plan. We know that he's in a very, very good spot right now. We just got to make sure that we're hitting the pitch we look for, and it's a very common theme. I know you and I talk about that quite a bit, where you got to just make sure you're looking for the right pitch in the right location and not missing it.
All right, Skip, go ahead tonight.
Thanks so much.
D-Bank skipper Torey Lovello before the D-Banks take on the Atlanta Braves game 2 of the series tonight. It'll be Zach Greinke against Julio Teheran. For more on the matchup tonight, tune into the BP show starting at 6 o'clock. We're on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station in the Valley, and all your locations on the D-Banks radio network, as well as on MLB.com and the At-Bat app. We will talk to you again tomorrow on Early BP, and let's hope for another D-backs victory and a 3-game win streak when they take on Atlanta tonight. Thanks for joining us for some Early BP.